I'd like to call the Board of Technical Registration meeting to order at 9:03. It is October 23rd, 2018. And I'm adjusting my screen here. Let's go ahead and do the roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel, Jack Gilmore.
Present.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Foose.
Present.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. We'll proceed to call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call for no more than 3 minutes. The board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on the matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anybody here to speak that's not signed up or that wants to speak on a specific agendized issue? Okay, hearing and seeing nothing, I will close the call to the public. And we will proceed to the adoption of minutes.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the meeting minutes of September 25th, 2018.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. I do have a correction that was noted, and I'll have to dig for this. It looks like it's on page 9 of the packet, which is page 5 of the minutes. There were some numbers quoted, some statistics quoted regarding home inspections, and I believe the number should be changed from 43% to 18%. Is that correct, Patty?
Yes. Just to let you know, 43% was stated, but then the board was provided with some research that Mr. Stamm did that reflected 18% as the correct number.
Okay, I see a number of 34.
I actually believe that the 43% was changed to 18%. Yeah, I think you informed me and I made a change.
Oh, okay. I thought we were doing it in the meeting, but it sounds like it's already been. But it's good for the discussion.
Yeah, that's fine.
The 34% related to the enforcement actions.
Okay.
So, and the 18% related to the parallel inspections that applicants are submitting.
Okay, so the number has been adjusted in the packet, and for the record, we are amending that number called out at the last meeting of 43% to the correct number of 18%. Any other comments, corrections, additions to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor of accepting?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are adopted. Item number 5, consideration of cases referred to formal hearing. We don't have anything, so we will move to enforcement matters. I have 7 people signed up for enforcement matters. 2 of them are call-ins regarding 6A1, and they indicated that we do not need to make contact if we're just going to move to dismissal. Is that correct?
If you have Kurt? Questions for them, you may contact them.
Okay, if we have questions, we can contact them. Does anybody have any questions on 6A1?
Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to dismiss case 6A1 per staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on 6A1? Hearing none, all in favor of dismissal?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask a question if anybody has any questions on A2, 3, 4, or 5.
We have speakers on 2 and 3.
Okay.
Really?
A2 and 3? Okay.
Yes.
Good try, though.
Trying to lump them all together.
Good try. I was going to do it.
Mr. Chair, six, eight, two, and three are here just to answer any questions you have.
That's how to dismiss.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to dismiss cases 6A2, 6A3, 6A4, and 6A5 per staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to dismiss 6A2, 6A3, 6A4, and 6A5. Any discussion on the matter? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passed. The next case with someone present is 6C2. And Mr. Rosendahl, the respondent, has signed up to speak. Mr. Rosendahl, do you want to approach the table? Please state your name.
Philip Wayne Rosendahl.
Okay, Mr. Rosendahl, we've looked at this case in our packet, and this is your opportunity to help us get through this.
Sure.
So feel free, you have the floor now.
Okay, I appreciate your time. Thank you for giving me the time to review this. I do have some handouts that I could show you to provide you to help with the discussion if you'd like me to pass them down.
Please do.
One of each of these to the board members. And the reason for my being here today is that the findings of fact of my case I wasn't in agreement with, and the determination, the consent agreement itself, the order, I thought was relatively harsh for what the situation is. What I've handed out is a copy of the office survey that I performed, along with the findings of fact that I would like to discuss. The first of which is that Black's mathematical ties to street and sectional monuments. And if you look at my Altus survey, I don't agree with that, because you'll see that I've tied to three sectional monuments and the bearings and distances match well with the plat of record, and all the monuments are described. The second item is that, and so this survey, from the information provided on the altar, this survey can be retraced. The second item is that the respondent failed to sufficiently describe his field observations of existing survey monuments. Ellen, if you look at those, the three survey monuments that I called out in the survey, I believe that they're sufficiently described. The third item measured versus record distances and bearings, but failed to provide record measured versus measured versus record distance and bearings. On this, and that may be, I didn't put measured on everything, but there's two bearings and distances that are of record, I did note as record. Everything else, all the other bearings and distances were measured. So I didn't put measured, and I didn't put a note to that effect, but they were so very close to the platted information that I didn't distinguish between platted and record, such as the Ocotillo Road bearing and distance. The record is only 5/400ths or 4/100ths of a foot off of the measured. Finally, I failed to record this survey within 90 days of completion. That one bothers me because I've been doing this a long time, and I've always taken the profession very seriously, surveying and engineering. And I've always thought and have been guided by the idea that if you're doing a survey that is of a platted, previously platted survey, and when you perform the survey and you find the monuments of the previously platted survey, and you find that there are no discrepancies in monuments found or monuments that you would set, that a recording that survey was not necessary. And so I didn't record this survey. And I did the Alta survey because I was going to be the engineer for the development of this property, but the survey did not get recorded. And so I looked at, and when I went through the administrative hearing to go over these allegations against me in this survey, and in doing so, I thought that I would come out of that hearing and it would, you know, for not being recorded, you know, it was vague whether it needed to be recorded. So I looked up on the survey requirements with the BTR, and there's five items whereby that direct you to record a survey. The first is any land boundary survey monument found and incorporated into the new survey where that monument is not referred to in or by any previously recorded public instrument. Well, all three of these monuments I used to do this survey were from a previously recorded plat. Secondly, any existing land boundary monument or found monument referred in a previously recorded public document when the public document fails to adequately identify the monument. Then, controlling monuments, I were fine. I found some existing monuments on the ground for the front two property corners of this survey that I did, and the back two I set. And so, and they were within hundredths of a foot of matching the plat. So That, I don't think that that particular item would require this to, this survey to be recorded. And any land boundary monuments are set in conjunction with the new survey. Regulation is kind of, to me, that says every survey that you ever do, if you're going to set a monument, you got to record it.
Precisely.
Every survey that you do, if you do a boundary survey of a subdivision lot that is already platted, recorded, and of record, you have to do a...
If you set a new monument, yes.
If you set a new monument, if you don't, if you find three of the four, say there's four monuments, if you find three of the four monuments, you have to, and you set one, you have to record that, even though it's a recorded plat.
That's the way I read it.
Well, I did fail there, but I never had that. And when I was reading the regulations, I thought, well, certainly it can't mean that we have to, every time we find do a survey of a platted subdivision and we use all the monuments of the subdivision and we find one that's missing and the others all fit, we have to record that. I didn't know that. And so, in that regard, I'm wrong here. And that was my concern when I went into the administrative hearing. So that covers the items of the findings of fact that I was concerned with. When it came down to the order, it was determined that I should, my license should be suspended and I should be placed on probation until I had a peer review of two of my surveys in the future. And there's a long list of things that I need to have my peer agree to and that he would review my work and sign me off on two surveys, and I can't record the surveys for my client until the peer review's been done and the board, and it's all signed off on, the board is in agreement, then I mean, if I've got a survey, that could be a month or 6 weeks delay in getting one of my clients taken care of. The third item, so those, the suspension and probation and that peer review, I think they're excessive for what we're talking about here. The continuing education, I'm signed up right now for 30 hours of continuing education, 8 hours of which is the fundamentals of boundary control survey. And the board is wanting me to do 4 hours, so I'm doing 8. The administrative penalty of $700 and expenses of $573. I'm okay with that. So I would like the board to consider my what I have done. I've been registered and I've taken this profession very seriously since 1972, and I'm still doing it because I enjoy it, and so I would appreciate it if the board would take positive consideration of what I'm proposing here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rosendahl. I'll open the floor to discussion.
I have a question for you, Mr. Foose. I understand the non-recording survey, you know, that I get. In your review of this, did you see anything else that was technically wrong with it?
No.
Just the recording the survey, that's kind of what I got out of it.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's, I could adjust the findings of fact to survey wasn't recorded and get down to a conclusion that a survey wasn't recorded, and then looking at the order, I mean, state suspension and probation is our normal course of action here. I don't have any problems with that. I think the peer review might be a little heavy.
I think the peer review, I think having peer review and continuing education both is excessive.
Yeah.
And he's already signed up for the continuing education. So, I mean, I would say the peer review, for not recording a survey, why does he need peer review?
Yeah, exactly.
I also think that the administrative penalty for not recording a survey is a little high, because that's typically not.
Why not lift the state suspension and probation?
Well, but that just has to do, state suspension means that if you don't comply with the order, so you're not suspended. It's just if you don't pay the administrative penalty or you don't comply with the order, then it automatically kicks in that your license is suspended. It's not suspended. It's just if you don't do what you're supposed to do in the time it's supposed to be done, your license is suspended at that point in time. It's just to ensure that you comply with the board order. So it's not that you can't work or anything else. That's why it's called stay. Just so you understand that part of it.
Right. Mr. Hunt explained that to me, but the problem that I have, it's on my record, and if somebody in the 6 months were to look at my look my license up on the, you know, a lot of times, like yesterday, I got a call from a surveyor down in Tucson who had the wrong number for me, and he looked me up on the board of registration, and because he wanted me to send him a CAD file of a survey that I'd done in 2012. And so when he looks me up, he sees that my license, I'm on probation, suspended on probation. I mean, I just...
That shouldn't be there.
That won't show until the order takes effect. There's nothing there now.
There won't be anything there in the interim?
There will be. If the order comes effective, that your status will show is on probation, but there isn't anything there now if somebody has
Now. I know that.
Okay.
But it'll be there for 6 months.
It will be permanent. It will show that you're on probation for 6 months, but it's a permanent record afterwards. So you'll still have the doc for 6 months, but there will be a permanent record.
And it'll be permanent that my license was suspended.
That we're on probation and state suspension. It would only show suspended if you violated court order.
I just don't think that what I've done here warrants such a punishment.
So, but back to my point, administrative penalty for failure to report a survey is, what are we typically doing on that? Like 700 seems high.
Yeah, I could take it down to 500.
I think that's normally what we've been doing on these.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
So,
Mr. Hunt, do you have any insight on that? What typical fines are for not recording?
Whatever you guys think is best.
Okay.
I think 500. I think that's what we've typically done.
Any further thoughts or comments?
We're not going to do the peer review. That's going to go away.
I'm waiting for a motion. We haven't had a motion on any of that yet. We're still discussing.
So, I mean, I'll make a motion on it. I got to find it. So, that we offer consent agreement encompassing letter reprimand, state suspension and probation, continuing education, administrative penalty of $500, cost of investigation of $573, not signed within 30 days, proceed to formal hearing.
Any changes in the findings of fact?
Yeah, change in the findings of fact as discussed to being non-recording of a survey.
Would it be 6 months for the probation?
Is there a time period in there?
Yeah, I mean, or it could be until such time that, you know, everything's met in the consent agreement. Does that seem reasonable? I mean,
yeah. You're probation? On probation until you do the education.
Until you do the education and pay the
cost
investigation and the administrative penalty.
But there's still a limit. There has to be a limit at the back end. 6 months?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, 6 months to comply. But if complied with sooner, it goes away sooner.
In the term state suspension, how does that relate with probation? Is it one and the same?
Yeah, it's all the same. Yeah. That's typical wording that we haven't had at least. It's just to ensure compliance. That's the only reason it's in there.
We're saying that, right, if he complies, that the probation's over. So it's not necessarily 6 months?
Yeah, it would be up to 6 months state suspension or until orders has been compliance.
The way that's worded, he could go over the 6 months.
Yeah. How about if I may suggest a 6 month state suspension with early termination upon completion of requirements?
There you go. That works.
That works.
Thank you.
So for clarification, what would be on his record then, if somebody looked it up?
It'll show probation, if he's still on probation. Once he completes and the order's terminated, it would be active, but that order is a permanent record if somebody asks for the background.
If they ask for it, but it
won't show up on the screen.
Right.
I mean, at some point it will show he's had discipline in the past, but it would show active if somebody looked him up once the order terminated.
Kurt, I think it should say state suspension / probation.
Is there a number of the continuing education, number of hours?
Eight. We have four in here, so. Is there eight going above the page?
Yeah, keep four.
Continuing education, 6 month state suspension with early termination of the order. Does that seem reasonable to everybody?
What about modifying the findings of fact?
Right, well, I think we discussed that. You guys need to modify the findings of fact to just not recording the survey.
So that was limit the findings of fact to just not recording a survey?
Right.
Okay. Is there a second on this motion?
I'll second that, Chair.
Is there any further discussion on the item? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion is passed. And before we close this item, if anybody read the assessment, there's an item of concern in Mr. Lawrence's assessment regarding the alleger. The alleger apparently performed a boundary survey and was comfortable with this not happening with his contractual arrangement with the engineer, and went ahead and performed his boundary survey and never recorded anything. I'm a little concerned with that, and knowing that, I'm going to suggest that we open up an investigation on the alleger to see if he met his obligation to record a survey when he did his boundary work as well. Is there any objection to that if I direct staff that way?
Is it the same property? Seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same issue, exact same issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And he...
How would you miss that? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Mr. Parlin, if you'd open an investigation on the alleger regarding this matter, I'd greatly appreciate it. That concludes item 6C2. The next item that we have a speaker, thank you, Mr. Rosendahl. The next item we have a speaker is 6E1, and Mr. Shaw, are you here? Please approach the table and state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is Lee Shaw.
Thank you. This is your opportunity to speak to us, and let me just cue this up here real quick, and I'll read the case setter here. The synopsis of the, this is case number 6E1, I'm sorry, case numbers P19009. The respondent firm is Lee Shaw Architecture, and the synopsis of the complaint is, on July 30th, 2018, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent and respondent firm advertised the practice of architecture on a website while respondent firm was not registered with the board. It is further alleged that the respondent offered to practice architecture without registration with the board. So, Mr. Shaw, this is your opportunity to address the board and fill us in.
Okay, well, I mean, as I've stated in my response letter, you know, I don't call myself a registered architect. I don't label myself an architect. I call what I do architecture. I work primarily in residential, and I've always been told that I didn't need to be licensed to practice residential architecture. But I, you know, it's the name architecture that I guess is calling this to attention, so I need guidance in getting through this. I'm not trying to do anything illegal or anything like that. That's not my goal. So if you have specific questions, I'm here to answer, but I think I've stated everything in my response letter.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I'll open the floor up to the board.
We've had this discussion numerous times.
Many times, yeah.
I
find this
guys is both
annoying. I really do. We have a person out there that's turning people in, trolling, and this just really bothers me. But Mr. Shaw, you do have in your letterhead, it says Lee Shaw Architecture.
Yes.
And that's an issue, I guess.
Yeah. It'd
probably say Lee Shaw Design.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to make recommendations, apparently, but that's what is an idea.
Right.
But I think you've had a long career.
It was just the architecture and the name of the firm. That would bother me.
Yeah.
That's all.
Otherwise, architectural design, there's lots of...
Well, I've been working
nice
with...
Nice adjectives you can use.
Yeah, I've been... I have a friend who I collaborate with who's a licensed architect who I've been discussing him, retaining him as my designated architect for my firm. So as a designated principal. And so if I were to have a designated principal on board and file a firm card, am I able to keep my name, Lee Shaw Architecture?
I don't think so.
You'd have to be a principal.
You'd have to be an owner and principal.
You'd have to be an owner.
Excuse me?
An owner.
You would have
vested
to be
owner in the business.
Vested owner.
So or your employee, your bona fide employee.
Well, he would be. I mean, I'm setting up an LLC, and I can have him as a member of my LLC or something like that. And,
yeah.
So, I'm looking at this as like he's my partner, not an employee necessarily. Because I mean, so.
It'd be the other way around, though. You'd be his employee.
Excuse me?
It'd be the other way around.
It doesn't have to be that way.
With a multi-member LLC, you can own 99% of it. Or, in Arizona, you can decide how much one member owns versus another.
Right. I don't believe the firm registration says it has to be a principal of a firm, does it?
144.
I would caution the board against getting too in the weeds in analyzing this, because the board could be into a situation where they give advice regarding how to go about doing this, and at a later date, a different board may interpret the statutes differently. This isn't meant to sound harsh, but the best way generally is to refer to statutes as plain reading of what they are, or have the person perhaps coordinate the board staff or how the process works. But the board may find itself getting to a position where it's advising on how to set things up in a way that may not necessarily comport with the interpretation of the law by a future board, especially if we start talking percentages of ownership and things like that.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. So focusing on the issue at hand, is there any action that we need to take as a board?
Issue a letter of concern. It's not in its permanent record.
Well, we can't issue that because it's not a licensee. Oh, we go a cease and desist, or not a cease and desist, assurance of discontinuance would be the correct thing.
Is that permanent? On the record?
Right. It would be consent agreement had to be drawn up with an assurance of discontinuance, you know, until such time that either, you know, he, you know, complies, you know, by getting someone and having a firm registration, have his firm licensed, or changing his advertisement
unregulated.
To the point. Right. That's why it had to be an assurance of discontinuance. I believe that's correct, right? That would be the proper thing. So if you do nothing, then you're basically just saying that what he has on his website is acceptable. So an assurance of discontinuance means either has to quit, you know, doing it, change the name or whatever, or, you know, become a registered firm and, you know, come into compliance with the statute.
Just for my own edification, is the protected term in the statute architect and architecture? So either term would require a discontinuance order?
Well, so like that other case we looked at, we had engineering in the letter.
We had engineering, and it was the exact same thing. So engineering and engineer would be a protected term in the title or not? Or it would have to be professional engineer.
It implies.
It implies to the public that you're practicing engineering.
Or architecture.
Engineering's a little different. You could have computer engineering or something like that that defines it. Software. Software.
Architecture.
Yeah. But this is isolated.
Yeah, professional engineer is a protected term. That requires a license. I'm just asking in the context of architect and architecture, how are those terms deemed on the statute?
I don't think they are.
don't think so either.
I mean, the way I look at these things is public perception. If you're the public and you read this website, I would assume that you're going to assume you're getting an architect. So now either you can change the name to be design, you know, maybe you could just put a line in there that, you know, at the very beginning, you know, Lee Shaw is not a registered architect with the state of Arizona. I mean, something that, something to the point where the public read through it, you could say, okay, you know, I understand what's, you know, what I'm getting, or, you know, what this is. So, I mean, I don't think we need to tell them how to do this practice, but that's why you issue an assurance of discontinuance, and he can work with staff or whatever to come up with, you know, a way to comply with the order.
Can I say something? My intent here is with my new partnership, if you will, that I'm sort of the principal designer and my partner is the principal architect. Like, I'm not trying to call myself an architect. So that's how I'm going to update my website to list me as the principal designer and my registrant partner as the principal architect.
So just a cease and desist?
Yeah.
I would think.
Let's see what Scott says.
Which, as Mr. Donald's talking about, it's not really up to us to tell him what to do, just issue an assurance of discontinuance.
Yes.
Figure it out.
Right.
I think there's numerous ways to go. Mm-hmm. He just needs to figure out one of them to comply with the board
order. Sounds like he's figured it.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to offer a consent agreement with a discontinuance. What was the word?
Assurance of discontinuance.
Assurance of discontinuance.
And then he comes back and works with the staff to get add recommendations on how to structure whatever his due.
No.
We didn't say that?
No. Just staff will work with him, you know, I would assume, if he has questions.
Yep.
I have a motion.
Does that make sense?
Do we need to add to the motion architecture?
I think he's about found.
Cease and desist what?
The term assurance of discontinuance could mean, essentially it means discontinuance of violating board statutes. So it doesn't mean you have to change the name, it doesn't mean you have to get rid of your architecture necessarily, it just means you have to be in compliance with the statutes, which means you could change the name or you could bring it perfectly compliant in order to keep the name. So. Mm-hmm. However it's done, we can't dictate how it's done except to say stop violating the statute. As long as it's not violating the statute anymore, we wouldn't have any problem.
Okay.
Is assurance of discontinuance a proper motion to make?
Yes, assurance of discontinuance is fine. It can be accomplished through whatever means brings the firm into compliance with your statutes.
So the assurance of discontinuance of violation of board rules and statutes.
I'll second that, Chair. If you need a second.
Do you want to include cost of investigation?
What is it?
Or not.
Yeah, I wouldn't bother. That's just my opinion.
He's here and happy to fix it.
Yeah.
We can not cost you more.
Make sure you follow through.
Hold on, yes, let's finish this out. I'm doing that right now. So
what's the time frame on this?
Let's go. Assurance of discontinuance.
Is that your motion, Mr. Jones?
I don't believe there's a time frame.
There's not a time frame?
It's just do it as soon as it's signed.
Okay.
If not signed within 30 days,
we'll have a formal hearing.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
So we have a motion to propose a consent agreement encompassing assurance of discontinuance. If not signed within 30 days, move to formal hearing. Is there a second?
Can we make a just motion to offer a consent agreement?
Mr. Jones, you comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Second.
Chair. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Okay, Mr. Chapa is in here to speak on item 6G. Is that correct?
Yes.
So we will move to 6G.
I will.
One.
6G1. Same issue.
Oh, yeah.
6G. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Rodolfo Chapa.
Well, thank you for being here. I'll run through this case setter quickly. This is case number P18071, and the synopsis of complaint is: on June 7th, 2018, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of engineering by preparing a failure analysis investigation report on or about May 14th, 2018 without registration with the board. It is further alleged that respondent firm advertised the practice of engineering in the state of Arizona on its website without firm registration with the board. Mr. Chapa, I'll give the floor to you. Please tell us why you're here.
Thank you, and thanks everybody for giving your time to listen to me. My firm performs failure analysis for insurance companies on mainly water cases and fire cases. So we basically do just that. We have a laboratory where we try and reproduce a failure where a filter or a sprinkler or something like that failed, and we try and determine what the cause of failure was. We don't do any design or anything else that is deemed engineering. So I agree with the board's decision that the name engineering, quote unquote, on our website or in our name shouldn't be there. I wasn't aware of that before. I am aware now. I do understand that not knowing is justification for not having to change the name or for some legal recourse. So through the course of this case, I did find that some other companies have gone through similar situations. I am willing, and after this I'm going to the Corporation Commission just across the street over there to change the name of the company. So first thing, I have a question for the board, and I think potentially it's going to be answered similar to the previous person that went before me, is if the name Forensic Engineering can be put into the name of the company. I noted that earlier in the year, or actually last year, the board voted to do forensic engineering a field that would need to have registration, and then later on this year, or earlier this year, rescinded that decision and said no, we're not going to require registration for that. I've been doing this for 14 years, and I've been approved in courts as an expert witnesses all the way from California all the way to New York. And I've never had any issues or any of my qualifications there questioned or been disqualified for any of that. So that's one question that I had for you. If not, I have other names that I'm considering. And then the second part is I understand that on the previous meeting that findings of law where it was discussed on the board that yes, the name engineering has to be removed for sure, but it's been brought up to my attention that I have requested that the penalties and fees would be reduced, but that wasn't brought up. I found several similar cases where the fees were reduced to $250 and there were no admin fees or research fees. So that is the second request that I have of the board. And pretty much that is it.
Thank you. I'll open the floor to the board for discussion.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, I think the penalties as part of his reconsideration are nominal. I mean, I don't think the cost of the investigation is a negotiable item. It is a de facto item. But, you know, I'll leave that for discussion. I think both items are nominal. That's my my take. So the $500 on the infraction and the assurance of discontinuance in conjunction with the actual cost of investigation, I think are proper for the disposition of the consent agreement. I hope everyone heard.
Thank you, Gene. Does anybody else have anything they want to add?
Can we remember what this was last time, a couple months ago? Mm-hmm. What was the, this was the
term. Issue again.
Yeah. Yeah. Forensic engineering versus, you know, forensic. I think he's addressed that in his name change.
So in the board packet, it said probably Centric's failure analysis. It's a pain in the butt to change your name, so I want to make sure that we're allowed to give him advice. Make sure that, is it forensic engineering?
Yeah,
okay,
should.
Just
should.
Take a stab at it and see what happens.
Yeah.
He just can't use the term engineering. Anything else, I think, is his decision beyond that.
I believe he just asked us if he could use the term forensic engineering.
No, I don't think we should engage in answering that at all.
Just a reminder, yes, the board's discussion is that, you know, the judge decides whether or not he can be an expert in a case, but the concern is he's putting himself out to the public as doing it with the expertise of being a registered engineer.
I guess my question for the board is, by changing his name, is that... does that meet compliance with the assurance of discontinuance? You know, if he's going to change his name.
I think assurance of discontinuance goes into the future, not just you'll change your name now, but you won't do this again.
Okay.
I think it's the same discussion we just had before. Assurance of discontinuance, complying with board's, you know, statutes. You know, for our discussion, it was the name, and this all goes back to the same thing, it's public perception.
Yep.
You know, if you have the name engineering in your title, the public would expect to get a licensed engineer. Yep. Even if you have the name forensic engineer,
that's right.
The public still expects to have an engineer, the way I look at it.
Right.
For materials testing and analysis, I agree. I think we talked about this last time, it's all on the record.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you were doing testing or something like that, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, you know, public perception and, you know, public including people and insurance companies and attorneys and anybody, you know, that would hire the firm.
Agreed.
And Mr. Chaffa, Ken, I think the recording is still available. You could listen to the recording before the discussion. That would help you.
Perfect. Thank you. And then briefly, just that I'm expecting her treatment as nearly identical cases too, so... the last case was in March that the board decided, yes, we're going to reduce the fees, and pretty much I'm just asking for the same treatment.
Yeah, we almost never exclude cost of investigation. So, frankly, sir, if you found one where we reduced it, or like
it wasn't
the last case. Yeah, I mean, that's very unusual. And the difference between 250 and 500 over the course of all our considerations is extremely nominal.
Nominal, right. I think it's nominal.
So.
And I'm of the opinion the cost of investigation is a fixed cost. I mean, it was so that it should stay. The civil penalty, I mean, yes, it's nominal. If we dropped it to 250,
still not.
That's where it is.
No, it's 500.
Yeah.
He wants 250. I mean,
so,
it's
oh, it's your question. Oh, yeah. 250 is fine.
I'd be fine with either way.
Yeah.
We've got 5250 before.
Somebody make a motion.
No, it's all yours.
Well, I have a no
on. Okay.
And lastly, if I may, before you make a motion, I just want to double check for the name Centrix failure analysis is going to not ruffle anybody's feathers in this building ever again. So, because that's a name that I will be choosing later today. I just want to make sure that we don't have to go through this again.
We can't say anything. I think the instruction is we can't use the term engineering.
Correct. So it's
and then beyond there, that, okay, that's kind of that. Our limit.
Okay. Thank you.
I think our discussion last time would be helpful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'll make a motion to reduce the civil penalty to 250 and otherwise
assurance.
Yeah.
Assurance of discontinuance, civil penalty 250, cost of investigation 590. Signed within 30 days, formal hearing.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so the only amendment is reducing the civil penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I'll second that.
Well, yeah, brief question on that. You said 30 days. We're on the letter I submitted, we were saying that if we could do it no later than the beginning of, or the end of this year, just for website.
I think that we were talking about signing the consent agreement.
Oh, okay, sorry, my bad.
It's all right. Yeah, it's got its own terms on payment.
We'll sign it today. Yes.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passed. Thank you, Mr. Chapa.
I think he's in prison.
Okay, I think we're out of speakers for anything other than 9A, so we will continue on.
The, yeah, I think I have it somewhere.
We have a gentleman in the audience, 6F, for appointment to be an EAC member.
Oh, 6F. Okay, let's jump to that. Thank you, Melissa.
I appreciate your.
So we are on to item 6F1, candidate for Enforcement Advisory Committee membership, Scott Wertle, PE Mechanical, registration number 42010. Did I pronounce your name right, sir?
Yes, my name is Scott Wertle.
Okay.
Forensic engineer.
Okay, well, we have a candidate here. Mr. Wertle, is there anything you'd like to say to the board?
No, that's why I didn't sign up to speak.
Okay.
Prepared.
Well, we appreciate you volunteering.
And Mr. Wertle, we met you at that seminar, right?
Yes.
See?
That's
public started. Outreach.
That's right.
Talk them into becoming an EAC member.
Do we take the blood here?
I'll make a motion that we approve Mr. Wertle to become an EAC member with the board.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Wertle.
Thank you, Melissa.
Pat and I met
thank
in
you.
The seminar. Spoke out well.
Okay, circling back to the agenda, we have item 6B, 1 and 2, complaints. Proposed for resolution by letters of concern. We can take those individually or if anybody wishes to offer consent.
We
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to offer letters of concern, 6B1, 6B2.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Moving on to 6C. I would entertain any motions for 6C, 1, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Chair, 6 has a signed consent that's in-house at this time.
6.
Which one? It's
C6.
Demand. Oh, C6. Okay. Oh, C6.
So he'll move down to D. Okay. I did have a note.
I'd like to discuss 6C3, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Let's run through these individually. I know I usually don't say stuff like that.
No, we like it.
I'm the new Alejandro.
Okay, we will move on to 6C1 then. 6C1 is case number AL19001. Respondent's name is Tyson Landon. The synopsis of the complaint is that on May 22nd, 2018, the respondent entered into a consent agreement with the board that included an order for assurance of discontinuance. On June 19th, 2018, the board received records from North Star Alarm Services indicating the respondent conducted 6 alarm system sales between May 22nd, 2018 and May 29th, 2018 in the state of Arizona. Respondent has never been licensed by the board as an alarm agent. Our investigator is Mr. Hunt, and we don't have a respondent here, so I will open the case to the floor.
I have no problem with the whole consent agreement on this one. I guess the question I had was, this was the one where North Star said that they hired him and he fell through the cracks, and is there an aiding and abetting case against them, or has that been on a previous agenda for this one?
That has been solved inside the consent agreement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That was the only question I had on this one. So I'll make a motion to offer the consent agreement. Have we already offered him a consent agreement?
Yes.
Yeah, he signed one.
He signed one before.
So this isn't really offering a consent agreement.
Well, it is because he violated it.
No.
He signed a consent agreement. He violated it. This is a compliance case. He's offered
another consent agreement?
Yep.
Yep.
Because he violated the order and conducted sales in the state the day he signed the consent agreement.
Okay.
So he just doubled his penalty. No, yeah. 2001.
Well, at what point in time, does this just keep rolling over?
Yeah, just according to my notes here, my note was move first consent to formal hearing.
Oh, rather than offer a second consent.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's just my notes.
He's not a registrant. He's not a registrant. How do we go after him?
Skip town. Well, we did it once.
But do we go out to the company?
I guess the question in general is, if we offer a consent agreement, someone signs a consent agreement, fails to comply with the consent agreement, why do you offer them another consent agreement? For them to fail to comply with that, multiplying the fines, and it seems like if he's not going to comply, he's not going to comply.
That's fine. At the end of the day, if the board votes to complain notice of hearing, statutorily, he'll have a right to a settlement conference under the administrative law rules of procedure. So we still could wind up in it. And the board does have a requirement to try to settle things through consent if they can. But yes, this certainly can turn into a litigious spiral of consent agreements.
And what would be the next step beyond? I mean, if you went to hearing, we have an assurance of discontinuance, but there has to be, there would be something beyond that, right?
If we proceed to hearing, if he's found to be in violation of hearing, the board would have the same options that it would have through a consent agreement. The issue is going to be a matter of enforcement as opposed to ongoing violations for failure. At that point, potentially, you go for an injunction to person who can continue to hold out. Depends on what evidence we have that they're continuing to engage in, but there'll be a sufficient evidence there to continue to engage in behavior. We can certainly pursue an injunction. In terms of a quick fix, that's not going to be it, because the injunction process is, takes a little while, but absolutely to get that ball rolling.
Well, we'd have to have a formal hearing to get to the... We can't just go straight to an injunction at this point in time, right, without the formal hearing?
Well, if the person is not supposed to be practicing right now, if they're in a consent agreement where, for example, they're suspended or they're not supposed to be doing it, and you're continuing to do it, then, you know, we should be able to proceed to get an injunction to prevent them from doing it.
This is an alarm agent.
Yeah.
And he's not registered.
Right. At the end of the day, it can be kind of a sledgehammer looking for a mosquito type of a situation with this type of a guy. He certainly could begin pursuing bigger actions, but I'm not exactly sure what outcome we want. I'm really going after him.
Well, and that could be, but as the board, to protect the public, yep. We have to try to stop this guy from going out there and selling alarms.
Yep.
I just giving him over and over consent agreements that he just signs and violates, I don't see what the public protection is. You're right. I mean, I think, you know, going to an injunction in court and all this is probably, you know, a little overkill for it, but what else are you going to do?
Well, depending upon the amount of money involved, if there's a sufficient amount of fines, for example, he's not paying, the Attorney General's office can pursue collection against him for that aspect of it. So it can be forwarded for collection. Beyond that, there is a certain point at which you sort of have to move into civil realm against somebody because you regulate activity, but beyond a certain point, if somebody's simply never, ever going to play the game, with the board, there are limits to what the board can actually do.
Right.
Somebody that moves into
question. If he was not a registrant at the time, then best we can do is the discontinuance. I guess my question is, North Star accepted some responsibility for not catching us. Can we ask North Star to participate in this or take some responsibility?
North Star has already been resolved through a consent agreement. So yeah, their case, we wouldn't be able to back them for anything ongoing with him. We've already resolved their case with them.
So he could get it to find another alarm company then if he tried to do something. So the issue comes back.
The answer to that is sort of depends on what he's doing. He could try to find a company to send him out in the field. He could just go door to door and pretend to be representing the company. That's where we sort of get into the whole consumer fraud aspect of it.
Is he doing this under a company or just as an independent contractor?
The evidence that we have, he did the six alarm sales, I believe, and from North Star. He's just been moved out of state working for hotels.
So when you say for North Star, was North Star aware he was doing them and
they submitted documentation.
He was doing it in their name but not with their permission.
Yeah, and North Star indicated that he fell through the cracks of being able to do the alarm.
So have we been in touch with him? Does he know he's looking at all
his
clients?
Oh yeah. He says he won't sign and he doesn't have the money to pay. Did he pay the other $1,000 plus
he
cost
paid
of
$500?
Total.
Right now he's working at the restaurant.
In terms of operations,
I'm not really sure injunctions. Yeah, because he's not practicing. I don't know. That's the difficulty we have.
He has agreed to pay the cost of the new investigation.
So how is he in compliance with the one he signed? I mean, at what stage in compliance are we in that one?
He violated board order by doing sales insurance discontinuance.
Right.
The cost, the money that he hadn't paid would have been forwarded to collections, however he started to make payments on that.
Okay.
So he's paid half the penalty and hasn't paid any of the $487 in costs.
Correct.
Did he say why he didn't apply to get registered? Is that because he didn't have a firm anymore?
He stated he's not going to. He only did those six sales because he needed money to pay for his family. He took a job with his father-in-law working on a state for everything else. There's no evidence to suggest he's continuing to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't see what we're going to get out of offering another consent agreement right. for this guy.
What's the time frame for compliance? Is it passed?
I don't.
Yeah, it was within 30 days
that's
after the May. Sorry.
Well, I guess you could consider the fact that he is trying to make payments and extend the period for compliance in lieu of offering a second consent agreement, see if he complies, and if he doesn't, then it could come back to you for further action down the road.
That's a good idea.
What would you recommend? Like 90 days,
continue paying? Last I spoke to him was a few weeks ago, and he states he's going to pay off the original consent amounts. He's past that time frame, but we do try to work with him. That's why we reached out to him to begin with, because he was beyond what was allotted in the consent agreement. We would have boarded the collection at that point. On his good faith statement, we're still trying to work with him on the statements.
Extended 90 days. So, and add the additional cost of investigation? Because he didn't seem to complain about that.
Right, that would be good.
Is it the new proposed consent agreement? He just said he wouldn't have signed it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we just hold him to his original consent agreement, extend the time.
Yeah.
You know, 3 to 6 months, you know, to comply. You know, the assurance of discontinuance needs to be immediate, which
right.
it sounds like it is. I don't know what more to do. I mean,
the new proposed consent agreement violation of board order was because he did six sales.
Right.
But that, I mean, that's...
So, what do we need to, if we want to extend the original consent agreement or modify the original consent agreement, is that what we need to do, or do we need to, because he's already signed it? I mean, how does that work?
If we just want to extend compliance, or dates for compliance.
Right, but those were probably written into the original consent agreement that he signed. So, would this just be an administrative thing, or how do we handle it?
Well, and now there's a new case, so in the, how would you recommend we resolve this with just offering a deport?
Well, I mean, it could be resolved in a number of different ways, and quite frankly, just looking at the, documentation here, it's relatively slammed on here. So, depending upon how the board wants to proceed, the board could offer consent, could have an extended period for repayment of things. The board could proceed to a hearing where there are six different individual allegations of violations, each of which would have a potential administrative penalty. And then the board could certainly proceed to collection and evaluate amounts after hearing if the penalties awarded. Quite frankly, we have penalties in the range of different collections in action. It depends on how the board best thinks it's going to be able to protect the public. That he doesn't appear to be around anymore. check cases, which it appears he's admitted to emails.
Are we allowed to hold on the new case, waiting to see if he gets paid up and has stopped doing this?
The board, well, the board can proceed how it thinks best, but there are allegations of specific violation, specific practice after the assurance of discontinuance, so the board would have to decide whether or not to proceed for a violation of the consent. So that's going to be a separate from whether or not he's under it. That would be a different violation of consent. So that one may not be accomplished or may be accomplished. Maybe the board could extend the time for him to come into compliance, but that wouldn't negate the fact that he has violated through practice.
I think we're getting a little too, my view is we're getting a little too hung up on whether or not he's going to comply in the future. I mean, if this guy had paid everything else and was up to date but had clearly violated the order and was still doing this in Arizona, I think we'd be all over.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't sound like he's even in the state anymore. And it sounds like he violated and then complied. So,
from a legal standpoint, one benefit to proceeding to a hearing or to proceeding with a separate consent for the six violations would be that should he try to come back to Arizona at some point and ever get licensed or get involved in the industry, there would be more of a, there would be a history of this.
Yeah.
So maybe we just,
offer
for this one, don't offer a new consent agreement, just proceed to formal hearing, or...
Yeah, I could do that too.
You know, so his original consent agreement is still intact.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, and staff can still work with him, and, you know, trying to get completed on that. Then this new case could go, we can go straight to formal hearing on it, right?
Yeah, you could.
So maybe just go straight to formal hearing on it, and then, you know, let it work through the system. And at least then, like you said, there's a record of it.
Is that your motion?
Oh, does that sound like a motion?
I'll second it if it is.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion to proceed to formal hearing and a second, and we'll have discussion.
No, I just forget for clarity, isn't noncompliance of a consent order to automatically proceed to hearing? I mean,
if not signed within 30 days, proceed to hearing.
And he did
sign. I don't
sign
think
it.
We automatically send a hearing if not compliant.
Well, if you sign a consent agreement and then you're non-compliant, non-compliance on a signed consent agreement does not automatically then go to hearing? No. Mm-hmm. No. Okay.
Comes back to the board.
Okay.
Which is what they did and opened a new case. So we have two separate cases. We have the original one that he's working with them on, and we have the new one that's this one. Okay. So on this new one, this is the one that we're saying we're sending to formal proceeding.
Sending
to formal hearing.
Formal hearing.
Which is what the motion is.
Okay.
And just from a legal standpoint, I just want to make sure that what the board is looking at proceeding to hearing with would be violations of those six alleged sales of alarms during a certain period, May 22nd to whatever, and then additionally an allegation of violating the board order. So there would actually be seven, I believe, charges here, unless there are additional. But my understanding would be those are the ones the board is looking at. Would that be accurate?
Yes.
Yes.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passed. Moving on to 6C3. 6C3 is case number HI-18024. The investigator is Loera, and the respondent's name is Thomas Culpepper. Synopsis of the complaint is, on January 30th, 2018, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent failed to enter and inspect the home's attic and failed to report on the evidence of the presence of rodents during a home inspection at 14510 East Yellow Sage Lane in Vail, Arizona, on or about May 11th, 2017. So I will open the floor for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, kind of similar to my observation on the earlier item, we have a case where a respondent is basically non-participatory. He was not present at the EAC, did not respond to requests by the investigator, and is, I guess, still to be determined whether he will or will not accept this consent agreement. He's not here today at the board to discuss this matter. So my question to the board is, in cases of non-participation by the respondent, when we offer the consent agreement that we unilaterally accept and he does not accept it in 30 days or beyond, we should be able to then summarily, you know, suspend him and proceed to hearing? Is that the action that we can take? Because I read the non-compliance section in the board order, and it seems to imply that. If I can get clarification on that.
All right, question for Mr. Don. Doesn't automatically, if I'm understanding what Gene's saying, if we offer him a consent agreement, he doesn't sign within 30 days, proceeds to formal hearing, but after that 30 days, he's not suspended.
No. He would not be suspended until after there was a hearing. If it was at OA, then the decision would have to come back to the board to accept, modify, or reject. If it was to the board would have to reach a decision, make findings of fact and conclusions of law, and then the discipline imposed would be the suspension. Again, nothing would.
So we have to go through.
We have to go through the sequential steps.
Summary suspension is like an emergency action. Yeah. If there's imminent harm, the board thinks will happen to the public if you continue to let a licensee practice before a case can go through a normal investigative process and hearing.
I don't think this.
Yeah, no, this doesn't rise to that level. It's just his non-participation with the board. And sometimes you get individuals that don't recognize the board's authority, right, or whatever the problem is. So we just proceed to hearing at that case.
Yeah, okay. That would have to be agendized, correct?
For a summary, right.
Yeah, consideration for possible summary suspension.
Right.
Yeah, if we're going to go a summary suspension route, there is a pretty high standard and pretty rigid procedure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Based on the past, people who have not communicated with the board change their mind when they get that complaint notice of hearing. And suddenly they're available again.
No. Once they get that subpoena served on them.
Good. All right. Then I'll accept the...
So you want to make a motion?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, we... on. On case number HI-18-024, I propose that the board submit the, trying to get the right verbiage here,
offer
the offer of consent agreement to the respondent for for his approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, and just to reiterate staff's recommendation on that consent agreement, it would be letter of reprimand, states suspension and probation, peer review, remedial training, restitution in the amount of $420, administrative penalty in the amount of $1,000, cost of investigation in the amount of $563, and if not signed within 30 days, proceed to formal hearing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So that is the motion and the second. Is there any further discussion?
Who seconded it?
Carmen. Carmen.
I did hear.
Hearing no further discussion, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. We'll move on to item 6C4, case HI19-011, Thomas Sullivan. Investigators, Mr. Will, and synopsis of the complaint. On August 23rd, 2018, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent and respondent firm advertised practice of home inspection on a website. While respondent firm was not registered with the board, firm registration expired on 7/31/2017. It was further alleged that respondent firm engaged in the practice of home inspection on or about March 19, 2018 at 8049 South Spur Trail Court in Gold Canyon, Arizona at a time when respondent's firm registration was expired.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to offer consent agreement for letter reprimand, civil penalty $500, cost of investigation $104, not signed within 30 days, formal hearing.
Second. We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. We will move to 6C5. Is case number P19008. The investigator is Mr. Will. The respondent's name is Gregory Nelson, registered architect, expired 9/30/2017. Synopsis of the complaint is on July 30th, 2018. The board received a complaint alleging that the respondent and the respondent firm advertised the practice of architecture on a website. While respondent firm was not registered with the board, it was further alleged that respondent offered to practice architecture while his registration was delinquent with the board. Respondent's registration expired on September 30th, 2017. We'll open up to the floor for discussion.
I have a question for Will. Have you been able to get a hold of this guy?
He's been completely non-responsive.
Do we even know, is this guy alive?
Yeah. The thing I have about this is on September 4th, we sent him a notice of the investigation, didn't hear back from him. October 4th, you made a phone call to him, didn't respond, and then October, one day later, we sent the consent agreement. Usually in the past, it seems like we've tried harder to get a hold of these people. Maybe you have, it's just not written here.
Yeah, I mean, other than the calling and used his website as a contact us form, tried that, and the mail he
responded to. Yeah, I don't have any problem with the investigative conclusions. It's just the details of the investigation seem lighter than I'm normally used to seeing. We really try hard to get a hold of somebody, but I guess it's not working out.
Not through email or mail or phone.
That was my question. Are we sure this guy's even still around?
Did we do a lecture on this next one? the area.
We'll see if he wants to do some work for you. Then I'll respond.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I have no problem. Now, if we, since we, obviously you send stuff back to him and get no response, obviously if we send a consent agreement, are we sending stuff registered mail, or do we just...
That would be, a consent agreement would be registered.
Okay. And then if we don't get a response from that, we can always service the... Serve him, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Any more discussion? Looking for a motion. Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to offer the consent agreement encompassing the assurance of discontinuance, administrative penalty in the amount of $500, cost of investigation in the amount of $176, and not signed within 30 days. Move to formal hearing.
We have a second.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Item 6C6 apparently has a signed consent agreement. Is that correct, Mr. Thacker? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion to consent 6C6 and 6D1 and accept signed consent agreements.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. I believe that I am through the enforcement matters.
Can we do C3? 6C3, do we have
6C3?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I have it checked off.
Yep. Okay. Yes. Oh, yes.
So we're all in agreement that we can move on to item 7.
We are.
Okay, licensing matters. Item 7A, whether to grant or deny request for extension of licensure timeframes for applicant application number 182272, and the applicant's name appears to be Kareem Mardambic, and I'll open up the floor for discussion.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion that we extend his deadline to June 30th, 2019, so we can get his transcripts.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Moving on to license consent agenda, item 8A. Have our normal list of cancellations in 8A1. And yes.
Can I make it another month? I don't know about Carmen though.
Slipping in with those W's.
Look close.
Just a comment for Mr. Winter. I like the organization of this forum. It's real easy to read and follow for me with the sorting that's happened on it.
Just the last name.
It's a little weird. It's sorted by first name. It's
yeah, how do you figure that?
He just got thrown down at the bottom, I guess.
Well, I see it by discipline. I'm looking at it by discipline. It's all mixed up.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to cancel registration certificates that have been expired for 1 full year, shown in 8A1.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Item 8A2 is review the list of registrations and certifications granted by the executive director under her authority.
No action on that.
And do we need any more time in that review? Okay. I will close item 8A2 and move on to policy matters. And we do have some speakers here for 9A1, or 9A rather. We have Peter Leeds and Keith Smith. I think we'll have both gentlemen at the table.
Oh, yeah. We're friends.
Friendly war.
Okay, so item 9A is review, consider, and possible action on a petition to amend the Arizona Administrative Code, Rule 430-102, Home Inspection Definitions, pursuant to ARS 41-1033. Gentlemen, if you'll state your names for the record, starting with Peter.
Peter Leeds, Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee.
Keith Smith, Inspection Training of Arizona.
Thank you, gentlemen. How do we want to proceed with this? Do we want the petitioners to speak first, or?
I think it's entirely up to you if you want to give them an opportunity to state their case, or if you just want to summarize and discuss. I think really maybe the board members have questions.
Well, I think I'll open up the floor to the board first and see what the board thinks about this petition to amend.
Okay, we went through this last month, right?
Correct.
And there was no resolution, is that what it was? Because
yes.
We were deciding it was a formal thing, is that kind of the path
yeah.
we're going down here?
Right. I think you had asked for some additional information about the licensing figures, and then Mr. Harlan found some enforcement figures, right?
Yes.
And Mr. Harlan had researched the question, actually it was Dr. Angel that posed it last month about whether enforcement actions that the board takes are primarily against new or existing licensees, and your conclusion was it was pretty much half and half, right?
Do you have the numbers?
Yeah, 26 enforcement actions were taken against home inspectors in the past 5 years. And of those cases, 9 home inspectors were licensed less than 5 years, and actually 17 were licensed more than 5 years, when the application process wasn't as streamlined as it is now. 5 years ago, home inspection was a separate unit at the board, and it wasn't integrated into our licensing section or our enforcement section. So the same 2 staff people basically reviewed applications and wrote up enforcement action recommendations for the board. And the oversight was not as broad at that point as it is now. We have since obviously integrated them into how we license and enforce in the same manner we do for all the other licensees.
And also, wasn't it just staff reviewing the reports, not
yeah.
actual home inspectors? So the comparison's a little off because things have changed.
Right.
Staff never reviewed the report, I don't believe.
Yes, they did.
5 years ago?
Yeah.
I've been on the EAC longer than 5 years. And
oh, that's for enforcement action.
No, I know, but during that process, though, the inspector would actually, the group of inspectors would review the report for the staff.
At the time I started, staff was reviewing them, but Melissa's been there longer than me.
Staff reviews first. Oh, sure.
first, but then it goes to, a committee member. Right. And, but they're not going to have a violation until it's approved by the committee member.
We're talking about two different things. One is a complaint's filed and it gets reviewed. What we're talking about is when an application is made. One report is reviewed to determine whether or not it meets the minimum standard. So Melissa actually changed the process and it was reviewed by a home inspector because now
Okay, so this is the application process.
Correct.
This isn't...
Not the EAC. That can influence some of these numbers because licenses were going without the review.
So, and I think we had this discussion last month as well, is the new statute about rules has to do with burdens with receiving an initial licensing, right?
Correct.
Tested.
Okay. So then the question is this parallel inspection issue, if I'm understanding, is this burdensome on the people who are trying to get licensed initially for the first time?
Correct.
And that's what the whole petition is about.
Yes.
Okay. And as I recall, the real burden were the remote parts of the state that had difficulty trying to satisfy those parallel inspections because there weren't enough qualified parallel inspectors unless they came to Tucson or Phoenix. That was the hardship that we were hearing about.
But that's not this petition.
But that's kind of what led, I think, to some of this.
Mr. Leeds?
Mr. Chairman, the parameters that the board directed staff to research last month actually are not accurate. They directed staff to research the age of the inspector versus the complaints, whereas the committee, the Home Inspector Committee, Rules and Standards Committee, is not interested in that. What we're concerned with is the burden that's being put on the Enforcement Advisory Committee staff, the members, to review applications. A better parameter would have been to see how many of those applications that come into the Enforcement Advisory Committee for review get kicked back and kicked back again and kicked back again. Personally, I do many of them, and I would say 90% of the home inspection reports that I review in an application get kicked back at least once. Now, what our contention is simply that if these gentlemen and ladies are being paid to train home inspectors to do 30 parallel inspections, and the 30th parallel inspection comes onto an Enforcement Advisory Committee's desk, member's desk, for review, and he kicks it back, we question all the other 29 inspections that are all supposed to meet the standard, because the one that was submitted did not. And it puts the burden on the Enforcement Advisory Committee member to actually do the job that the parallel inspector is being paid for. In essence, we're doing the correcting and sending it back, and taking it again and re-correcting it and sending it back. This is the truth when it comes to applications. So to ask the staff, and I felt so bad for them last month, to go back and try to put together the age of an inspector versus complaints, when the truth of the matter should have been how many of these inspectors, the age of the inspector versus his parallel people being returned back for another review. And we are concerned with not only the home inspector's parallel people, such as Mr. Smith's school, his parallel inspectors, we are concerned with them, but we're more concerned with the parallel with the applicant who is not getting trained properly, and we're concerned with the Enforcement Advisory Committee members who actually are overburdened, if you can imagine, by having to do the work that other people are being paid for. This is why we have raised the bar. We have said we need a bottom line for people, for their qualifications to actually do this. And we put the bottom bar at 5 years, 250 inspections, 3 years clean with the board, which is not unheard of. As much as we want to argue this point, as much as we do have inspectors out there doing parallels with less experience, this is our problem. This is the problem we're trying to solve. And also, we use this to get on this board. You cannot get on this board with less than 5 years' experience. You cannot get on our Rules and Standards Committee with less than 5 years' experience. You cannot be vested in the company for partnership with less than 5 years' experience. It's a basic rule. It's a basic bar. It's a basic benchmark, if you will. Okay?
Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm sure Peter wasn't calling out inspection training of Arizona.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
As far as the training, or as far as the time limit of 5 years, there is really no justification, even though it may be justified for Peter because of being on a board, you need 5 years and all that. And I said this last month, if you want to have good training, you should require certification for a parallel inspector or a training class, and that is the secret. Secondly, according to 1033, this petition that I'm filing here, I've also done a little research, and I'd like to just throw this out to the board. October 18, 2016, the chairman is the one, Mr. Swartz, proposed changing this language to mirror this board, the five-year thing. At that meeting, they sent it right to the governor's office. According to 1033, there is a stipulation here for burdensome. Not only does it affect my business, just last month it's $4,000 worth of revenue that I did not see. My inspectors are suffering from it as well. But letter F, a person may petition the council to request a review of the final rule based on a person's belief that the rule does not meet requirements specified in 41.10.30. And 1030, which applies to this, is if the rule does not comply with 41.10.21 through 10, or yeah, 1021 through 1029, and 1029 is the big one here. I do not believe it says right here where a copy of an economic, small business, or consumer impact study has been performed. I do not feel that this was thought out properly and what the impact would be. I've contacted over a dozen inspectors. They're very upset about it. They don't want to come to the board because they're a little intimidated. But this is really impacting the whole industry. And I don't think a proper study has been performed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I, sitting here as a board member, what I'm looking at is the question of whether to approve or deny your petition. And I certainly, as an American, don't want to deny anybody the right petition. But on the other hand, I've watched this go all the way through due process and end up at a place where it's been reviewed and looked at and twisted and turned, and none of the folks that are incensed now were incensed then. So I'm very comfortable denying the petition on that. It sounds bad to me. I don't like to say those words, but I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable that we've went through due process and establish what we need to establish.
Can we ask, Rob comes to our school and gives a nice presentation, and he's involved in the licensing. Do you think this is going to cause a slowing of licensing? This is going to cause a burden at all? Do you know?
I don't know.
Do you see anything? Do you hear anything?
I get a lot more questions now about where can I find parallel instructors. So I get a lot of my phone calls these days are, I'm trying to go through school, they don't have anybody. I think the schools used to have people that they could set up with parallel inspections, and right now they're not set up to help their students I just spoke with Arizona Real Estate School in Scottsdale yesterday, and there's about 19 people in that classroom, and they kept asking me, where am I going to find parallel inspectors? So I know that's a question, and I know that needs to get sorted out by people that are qualified, need to start stepping up and doing it. But.
Well, I think there's a similar circumstance in land surveying, which is based on experience, too. I mean, let's take Springerville. There's two surveyors in Springerville. Kingman, there might be three that are active right now. So I don't think it's a foreign concept to have to pursue your profession if you want to develop in it. I don't think that's a strange thing in this state, so especially with our remote and rural areas. So I'm not that unexpected of statements like that.
But are they all rural people, or are they from the city?
No, it's city as well.
And we have a list that people can request of people, home inspectors that are certified. We could probably determine who's been licensed 5 years or more and send those lists to people if they request them.
And maybe these new inspectors need to go work for a firm that trains them and has licensed inspectors. Just like as an engineer, as soon as I got out of school, I had to go work for a firm that had licensed engineers to get my training.
It's a little different.
Architects are the same way. So, I think there's, as opposed to just, getting out of home inspector school and just going out on your own, I think that's, could be, it's a change in the paradigm of the way they do things, but
not so
it's
much,
the way to get the training.
If I may, when we first certified, we had to grandfather people in, and most of those people that were grandfathered in to at the beginning of the certification were in business for 5 years or more. And when we started requiring parallel inspections at that certification, we had no trouble finding people that were qualified to do the parallel inspections with these gentlemen and ladies who have been actually getting certified for the last 18 years, or I should say 15 years, okay? I would guess that, and it's just a guess, but I would guess that half the people that are certified as home inspectors in the state right now have been in business for more than 5 years. If we're looking at 400 plus home inspectors in the state, then we have at least 200 plus home inspectors out there that can actually do parallels. And back in the day, we did a lot of parallels, and now that there's so many inspectors out there, I don't have to do as many, thank you, but but they're a charge, we charge a fee for those. We've never had problems finding parallel inspectors when we look, okay? If we're going to sit around and ask in a classroom, no offense, or in a meeting, where do I go, and the person you're asking doesn't know, ask someone else, because there are many people out there doing parallel inspections. Also, the associations are putting together lists. The ASSI Association and NACHI are actually putting together a list of people that will be willing to do parallel inspection. We've been looking at this, and it's been coming down. It's been in the pipes for a very long time, and the associations are actually been preparing for it.
So they're preparing them, but are they prepared?
A list of people that would be willing to do parallel inspections.
That are qualified.
There are lists.
Can I ask Scott if his opinion on my petition?
I can't. I'm the board's legal counsel. I can't.
Well, I mean, for the board, because this is a big issue. I mean, if there isn't an impact study done, how can a rule be changed? And according to this, it can't. It should have been nullified.
I'm the board's
if they ask
counsel,
you.
I can't.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry to meet you.
No, that's fine. I also want to mention that during my investigation after this meeting on October 18th, 2016, and Mr. Swartz proposed this, I just happened to check out who provides parallel inspections, and his company comes up as a parallel inspection school, more or less, and he's not even post-secondary certified. So I think this is a potential conflict that this board should look at.
However, on the other hand, to do parallel inspections, you don't need to be post-secondary certified. You need to be a certified home inspector.
True, but
to train to do, we have our three-legged stool. We've talked about this before. We have our training, our classroom training. We have our parallel inspections. We have our national exam. Okay, the national exam everyone has to pass, even the guys who were grandfathered. The 84 hours of training are done by post-secondary certified people. Parallel inspections are done by certified home inspectors. They don't cross over. The schools very often will cross them over, but there's no rule that says you need post-secondary education to do parallel inspections. The committee, Rules and Standards Committee, is not interested in whether or not the trainers know what's taught in the, or are able to teach what's in the classroom. We want them to have experience in the field, and their certification gives them the qualifications. We just want to raise the bar so that we're not constantly sending back applications and not servicing these home inspector applicants properly, but or overburdening the Enforcement Advisory Committee members.
My issue is you should not have a chairman propose a motion that he's going to benefit personally. That is wrong. And I think you should look into that as well.
Mr. Chair, in this case, I agree with you on this. I think this petition doesn't warrant going back and changing the rulemaking for this particular petition. That's just my opinion on it, and I think that's what the board action is at this point in time.
Yes, it is.
5 years we're trying to go 5 years or 250. That was what they were looking for.
So our action is whether or not to accept or approve or deny Mr. Smith's petition. So any further comments?
I would hesitate to second guess 2 years of work in public.
Agreed. I'll reemphasize, it doesn't sit well with me to reject a petition, but I do agree with the previous statement that this went through a stringent process, and I can rest on that due process. If there's a flaw in that, I would hope that it might be exposed at a higher level, but I think we're comfortable with the process, or I am, anyways. Does anybody have a motion?
Can I add one more thing here? I mean, since I brought this to your attention about the impact study, can you look into that? I mean, this is, if it's not performed, it should be nullified.
Thank you. Ms. Cornelius?
For education, Mr. Smith, when the board submits the packet to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council for approval, we submit an economic impact statement, and it is reviewed by economists over at the Governor's Regulatory Review.
And you have a copy of it?
We do, and it was published with the rules. Ms. Fritzl's looking for a copy to give you at this point, but that was approved along with the rules back earlier this year.
So at this point in time, we're just...
I'm looking for a motion.
Oh, okay. I'll make a motion that the board reject the petition of Mr. Keith Smith regarding the rulemaking, this rule. And I guess that's the motion, I guess. It's kind of uncharted territory.
Well, I think it's a simple approve or deny. petition or accept it. Yes, please.
Yes, under the statutes, if the board rejects the petition, the board needs to state its reasons in writing in the denial to the petitioner. So there will actually have to be a writing issued by the board outlining why the petition is being denied, and that will then be provided to the petitioner.
Is that something
Thank
that
you.
Staff would put together? I think you have already put it together somewhat. So, okay.
So we have a motion to deny the petition. Do we have a
second to that, Chair?
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, as part of the motion, if the board could just make sure to be absolutely clear on the record as to the basis for the denial that are going to go in the letter.
Okay.
And also, if you can state that the impact study was completed to your satisfaction as well.
The motion would just be whether to accept or reject the petition, and then the reasons, crystallize the reasons that are going to be in the writing for the denial of the petition.
This is extremely complicated.
Can one of those reasons be that there was ample time for public comment and concerns previously during rulemaking?
Yes. The background about why the committee and then subsequently the board determined to amend the definition of parallel inspector, as Mr. Leeds explained, as a reason.
Yeah, then we think that was warranted.
Okay, so it looks like on page 8887 of the packet, there's staff recommendations that the board denied Mr. Smith's request for the following reasons, and there's eight reasons listed. So I will amend my motion to include the reasoning behind the board is in compliance with the staff recommendations in the board packet, items 1 through 8.
I'll second that, revise my previous.
Okay, so we have an amended motion and second to deny the petition consistent with the explanations numbered 1 through 8 per staff recommendation.
Can you read those?
You will to the law get a copy of this, right?
Yeah, you will get an actual response. Yeah, but this is an open session, so anybody that comes to review the minutes, I'd like them to be able to see what the reasoning is. Is that okay or not?
Is the packet part of it?
Can we just reference this document?
Can we just incorporate them into
confidential?
Okay. I'll go ahead and read the items in. Per staff's recommendation. Number one, let me back up. Staff recommends that the board deny Mr. Smith's request for the following reasons. Number one, the parallel inspection requirement for home inspector certification is akin to a required training program and very similar in theory to the experience requirement that other board-regulated professions must complete and properly demonstrate to the board prior to being granted registration. It is critical that home inspector applicants complete this training, 30 parallel inspections, all of which meet the standards promulgated by the board prior to certification to ensure that the public is protected and can be assured that those who complete home inspections and draft required reports meet the standards and board rules. Mr. Smith is not alleging that 30 parallel inspections are unduly burdensome license requirement. He is simply alleging that he employs don't meet the new requirement of having 5 years of registered experience. Number two, 34% of the board's enforcement actions this past year were taken against home inspectors who make up 3% of the board's licensed population. Most of those actions included allegations that the home inspector reports did not meet required standards. The new rule was drafted as a direct response to these staggering figures and in an attempt to better protect the public from those licensees who were not practicing up to the required standards. Number three, Home Inspectors Rules and Standards Committee proposed that the board define parallel inspector in the newly amended rule to ensure that new applicants were learning how to properly inspect properties of all types from experienced certified home inspectors who have inspected many different types of properties. The committee members who also review applications for home inspector certification and serve on the board's EAC committees were concerned that many new applicants and registrants were not receiving thorough training on how to properly conduct statutorily required home inspections or writing reports that met the board's promulgated standards. They drafted the new rule to include the requirement that parallel inspectors have five years of experience to ensure that those providing the necessary training to the new applicants had enough and thorough experience. Better training on the front end will reduce enforcement actions against home inspectors in the future. In addition, the five-year requirement comes from the National Home Inspector Association recommendations. Number four, the board provided notice of the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee's intent to modify the rule and posted its agendas on the website. Similarly, the board discussed and adopted the rules at its own public meetings, which were properly agendized and noticed to the public. Mr. Smith could have attended any of the public meetings where the rule was discussed prior to being sent to the board for final action. After the board received permission from the governor's office and entering into the official rulemaking process, the proposed rules were published in the official register by the Secretary of State's office. Staff also posted notice on its website that the rules were being amended. These forms of notice informed the public that the board would accept comment on the rules. Mr. Smith did not comment on them. Later, GRRC provided notice of its meeting where the board rules would be considered in study committee and later at its own official meeting at which the rules were adopted. Mr. Smith did not attend any of those meetings. Mr. Smith has requested... Number six. Mr. Smith has requested that the board amend its rules to protect his business. His request does not consider the public's health, welfare, safety concerns, and it does not illustrate that the requirement for 30 parallel inspections, which has been in effect since the board began regulating home inspectors in 2002, is unduly burdensome. Mr. Smith could hire inspectors who meet the new standards to provide parallel inspections to his students, or his students could use other resources to complete their required training. He is not the only resource for parallel inspections in the state. Number seven, the new rule has been in effect. Let me reread that. Number seven, the new rule has only been in effect for 2 months. The board should not hastily move to amend it until significant time has passed to see if the desired effect of lowering enforcement actions occurs. Furthermore, the board should not amend the rule simply because one registrant who owns a business educating future registrants finds it challenging to meet the new standards. Such an action would not make good public policy. And number eight, the board is empowered by statute to protect the public and license qualified home inspectors not to help one business owner supplement his income seemingly without regard for whether his graduates are actually qualified to practice home inspection safely in Arizona. That concludes board staff's recommendation.
Thank you so much for reading that. Two or three are implying that my company...
Sir, you don't have the floor. We're in a vote here.
Okay.
So we have a motion and we have a second, and we've incorporated the staff's recommendations into the minutes.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I would just like to add the number five to the paragraph. I think that was skipped, just to show that there's one through five. You have the written notice, but just to make sure the number five paragraph is labeled such, so we know it's... We talked about eight. We've got eight. Whoever...
So, item number five, I'll read it again just for clarity. After the board received permission from the governor's office, and this is item five, after the board received permission from the governor's office and entered into the official rulemaking process, the proposed rules were published in the official register by the Secretary of State's office. Staff also posted notice on the website that the rules were being amended. These forms of notice informed the public that the board would accept comment on the rules. Mr. Smith did not comment on them. Later, GRRC provided notice of its meetings where the board rules would be considered in study committee, and later on its own official meeting at which the rules were adopted. Mr. Smith did not attend any of those meetings. That's the end of number five. Thank you. So we have a motion and we have a second to reject the petition. We've incorporated staff's recommendation into the minutes. Is there any further discussion from the board? Hearing none. All in favor of rejecting the petition?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. The petition is rejected. That concludes item 9A. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can we take a short break?
Yes, that's a wonderful idea. We'll break for, it's 11:12. Let's come back at 11:30. Sorry. Okay. We've ended our break a little short. It's 11:23, and we are resuming the meeting with item 9B. 9B is substantive policy statement regarding land surveying public records repositories in Arizona. And I need a second to cue this up. So,
a second.
There we go.
Aye.
We're voting. Okay, in front of us we have a draft of a substantive policy statement that's gone through the L&R committee. I believe our task today is to review this and accept it. Is that correct, Melissa? So this will
or
be...
Or modify it if you don't like the way it looks.
Okay,
certainly do that.
Accept, reject, modify. The end result of this action today will be this item posted on the website, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. And filed with the Secretary of State's office, so
okay.
It's put out to a broader audience at that point.
So if we vote on, if we vote to accept this, it will be the final document.
So what do you think?
I'm very comfortable with it.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd make a motion that we accept the policy statement.
I know that Jason provided the actual site to the BLM?
Yeah.
Do you want to include that?
No.
Or are you,
okay. No. No.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, Neil. That was an excellent motion.
Thank you.
getting better. So if you could restate the motion.
It was so good. Mr. Chairman, I would like to move that we accept the substantive policy statement as recorded in our agenda.
We have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the item?
Substantive.
May I ask, Mr. Chairman, on the first statement, land surveyors shall file, blah, 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 would that have impacted the earlier survey questions we had from the one of the previous witnesses?
No.
Both no.
Okay.
No.
That's a good question. Different subject or different type of survey?
There's no change in that language. We're not changing any of the statutes or the laws or anything. We're just clarifying.
I gotcha.
Just clarifying that ADOT can...
ADOT's a repository. Right. The county engineer, yeah.
That they're acceptable.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Before we exit this item, I have a concern with, I'm going to use the term petitioner for the person that brought this question to the board. I'm concerned that the individual may not grasp all the concepts here. There seems to be a misunderstanding that only the recorder's office is the official repository of records by that individual. I'd like to ask the investigative staff to open up an investigation on his practices and see, just to ensure. I mean, if he's down here shaking a stick at us, that's fine. But I'd like to see that he understands that he should be referencing these other repositories in his records research. Is that an acceptable request, Mr. Donald?
From a purely legal standpoint, I would not advise going down that path, as legally it could give the impression that the board is taking action towards petitioner with regards to something. I would advise against that course of action.
I understand that, and that sounds fine by me. I think that's good enough to hear that. That's fine. Yeah.
We can certainly send the petitioner a copy of the substantive policy statement and encourage him to listen to the thorough discussion that occurred at the L&R committee meeting, which should be available on the website. So if he has further concerns after that, I'm sure he'll let us know.
So I'll just limit my statement of concern to this open forum, and I just want to express to that registrant that he understands that these are places he should be looking for records in addition to whoever else is using them for recording. And my concern is honest and pure, and I get there because I read his responses, and it just didn't seem like things were connecting. And the concern is genuine on my part, so.
And from a legal standpoint, I don't think there's any question whatsoever concerning the actual motives of you or the board whatsoever. It's purely a matter of possible misinterpretation down the line by somebody else. But I do think that absolutely that potential concern could be conveyed with the information to the petitioner. But yes, I don't believe there's any question whatsoever concerning the motives.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. I guess that closes 9B, and we can go on to 9C, BTR participation in ABET. Gene, that sounds like something
well, it's been
for you.
Well, it is, if
we were to get the roster of ABET visits that are scheduled for 2019. I'm still, you know, opening, you know, Melissa, we still have that open request with the, I guess he's president or vice president of ABET to respond back to us on what exactly is planned. I know from websites, because I can visit the ABET accreditation audit schedule website, that in 2019, all the major universities, I don't know which programs, but probably several, in Arizona, at ASU, at NAU, and several other colleges, will be open. So we know that as a fact. We also know that there's this issue about distance learning. And I mentioned this, in fact, there was a presentation I went to from NCEES at the annual meeting on distance learning, where ABET is accrediting computer-based degree programs. So you can get an electrical engineering degree now through a university. I believe, I think Stony Brook University in the state of New York is offering the program, and I think ASU in Arizona is offering the program for an electrical engineering ABET accredited degree by correspondence online. No classroom attendance required. So I think, you know, once we get into those kinds of threshold issues, we need to be present and involved. In fact, I spoke with, because I know her, the executive secretary of the New York board, and she told me that she sent a bunch of people out to Stony Brook University and had input during the accreditation of the electrical engineering program in their state. We were completely left out with the ASU accreditation. And that's already gone forward, and I assume it's been finalized with ABET. So if they're going to expand this and open up this program to other disciplines, you know, how do you conduct laboratories? How do you do, you know, capstone projects? You know, there's a whole bunch of questions I have for ABET, and how do you consummate a degree granting program from a computer, from distance learning? These people don't even have to be in the United States. I mean, I don't know where they are, but they can just do it by internet to obtain a degree from you know, from an ABET accredited institution. So these are the kinds of reasons why I'm pushing on that. I hope we get some answers.
Can we just show up at their meetings at ASU U of A in 2019, or do we need a special invitation?
The lead auditor might take objection, because it's as big as this board. I mean, when they come into the university, they have at least, you know, upwards of, you know, anywhere between a half a dozen to a dozen individuals. You know, they're from academia, from industry, and they should be from board registrants to participate in the audit. And I think we, you know, we should get an invite. It's just something that I find their reluctance is just, it just escapes me, you know, why they are not willing to cooperate.
Send another letter if you want.
I would. I mean, okay. You know, I want to be intrusive, because I think they're making changes in the education program for ABET degrees that we rely on to grant licensure by the years of experience moves around depending upon the quality of the undergraduate degree. So it is a part of our licensing program.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jason and I agree that getting a mechanical engineering degree online is okay, but the electrical is concerning.
How about the civil?
You can't get civil.
Architecture.
Yeah.
It's only half of that.
It's supposed to be on my side. We're a team.
Sorry, it turned on you.
Oh, payback.
So do we have anything else on that item?
No, just direction to me to write a second letter.
Okay. Thank you, Gene.
Thank you.
Item 9D.
This is good news. Asset online payment options. So while Patty and I were putting together our budget and talking to whom we needed to talk to regarding our plans to enhance our system and provide for online renewals and the ability to pay with credit cards, we learned that Asset, which is part of DOA, actually has an online payment portal available that other state agencies are using. So, shocking. And so I put in a request and said, hello, we'd like to join. So Patty and I sat through a fairly confusing techno presentation. But so we have to fill out some paperwork and send it to the treasurer's office. Sure. And then Asset, for free, will build a basic payment portal that we can make available to our licensees to pay with credit cards when they renew, at least at this point. And then we can expand on that once we get our enhancement money, hopefully to, it won't connect to the back end, meaning our staff will get reports of who paid with credit cards, and then we still need to manually go in and update people's electronic files, but licensees won't know that. You will be able to download a PDF of your renewal, hopefully, and fill it in and click through our new website portal that takes you to a payment processing, and you will get a receipt that says, thank you for your payment of X dollars on such and such date, and then your license will be renewed. So it's going to take a couple weeks to get all the paperwork organized and have our lack of techno knowledge questions answered. And then they say that it will take 2 to 3 months for Asset to build us this portal, which connects to our website. And before Alejandro is replaced, we might actually be able to do online credit card payments and renewals. Yes. And then if we get the $150,000 that we're asking in addition to our normal budgetary appropriation, our hope is to use that money to work with a vendor to make that process seamless, meaning we won't have to manually go in and update everybody's computer files, because there should be a way to talk to the payment portal and have it upload into our system. So keeping our fingers crossed, I just wanted to report on that and ask a question, because one of the questions they ask us is whether we want to charge licensees a convenience fee for using the credit card. There's like a 2% or something.
For most, it's 1.45, and for American Express, it's 2 point something.
Right. So we would have to pay for licensees' ability to use credit cards unless we capture that convenience fee and make the licensees pay for it. I don't know what you want to do. We don't know how much that will cost this year. What we could do is not capture it at this year, once it, because it's 3 months away, and see how much we actually lose, and then ask for extra money next year, or have the system enhanced to capture it next year, something like that. Or we can just start charging it. There are some small state agencies, like the Podiatry Board, believe it or not, who can provide online credit card payments through this portal to their 400 registrants, but they charge them the convenience fee.
There's one complication to the convenience fee they warned us about. If we over-collect, we have to pay it back in a prorated to all credit card users, which could be a really annoying process.
Right.
To give them 24 cents back?
Exactly. Or
which costs
$3,
$10 to process
a
20%
right.
Refund. Yeah. So that makes me shy away.
I'd favor some kind of action that would not impose a fee up front,
okay,
and see how it works out.
What do you guys, what the rest of you think?
I mean, I would never want to pay, go through the hassle of paying someone back.
Right.
So maybe instead of a percentage, you just figure up what the cheapest thing we have that you pay with a credit card. And let's say it's $7, you charge $5 just flat, as opposed to a percentage. You know, because like you said, for Visa it might be 1.7, MasterCard might be 1.8, American Express might be something different. And if it was just like, whatever the minimum is, just go below, a little bit below that, then you're not losing all the money, but you're not having to go through a complete pain to refund people 24 cents.
Yeah. Although 1% on architecture licenses is about like 50 cents.
Yeah. Well, it's $300 right. to renew. What's
yeah. Yeah,
$3?
Isn't there, there's a $50 for the firm that I was looking
at. And a $50 for the firm.
Yeah. Oh, so that'd be 50 cents.
But yeah. We could also use this payment portal to collect for public records requests that we get a fair amount, like at least a dozen a month anyway.
Probably less than that.
Oh, less? Okay. But those depend on the size of the records requested, so...
Can you vary, I mean, per service, let's say licensure and applications would have no credit card fee, records requests would. Can you have a tiered system? Is that more problematic than...
I think so,
okay.
Because it's all electronic and it's with whatever agreements that the treasurer's office has with the banks and the credit cards. So I don't think we'll be able to vary that because other state agencies don't. I think it's just a fixed fee that they levy against us. So we could say no convenience fee and then look into it if we feel we're losing money. That's a fair way, I think, to proceed. Look at some of the figures for the first year and see if it's going to be a heavy revenue loser.
And who, well, and it would have to be a huge amount to fund a big budget.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find them annoying, you know, when you go and try to use it says, oh, we're going to charge you 3%.
Well, they tell me it's a convenience fee, but whose convenience is it?
Theirs.
Is it mine or is it theirs? Is it both?
Yeah.
I think it's both, you know, but still, I mean,
something
to consider.
You're giving them a discount. You're going to give them a 3 to 5% discount if they use credit cards.
You're right.
This is going to cost you.
You're right.
Right.
So, I don't know if it's a lot or not, but...
I don't look at it that way. I mean, all of our fees are going to go into supporting this system. Everybody's fee, whether they pay by check or not. So... I mean, it's just the cost of doing business, the cost of capturing money electronically.
So I mean, another thing to do is to consider raising fees, but I don't know that that would be popular in this day and age.
5.5%.
Yeah. So it's really up to you. I just need to know because we have to fill out this paperwork.
So let me ask this. I mean, do we typically have a budget surplus?
Yes.
Is it an amount that could accommodate 40,000 registrants all paying their fees at once at 5%, which would be somebody helping?
No,
sure.
Not
Scott,
40,000.
Scott, math?
Not 40,000, but...
How many?
You know, it'd be one-third of that.
Yeah,
one-third
of that, yeah.
And then they're saying it's between 1% and 2%, not 5%.
Yeah.
So
I think we could probably afford $3,000 or whatever it ends up being. I'm curious to see how effective this is, and you know, considering the nightmare we went through with the previous people trying to get us a portal, to hear that ASSA thinks they can do it for free is just stunning to me. So let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
let's see how it.
I think I brought this up a long time ago. Like every other state, you can go get your driver's license and put in.
And you were right.
It's like, come on. This isn't reinventing the wheel.
You were right.
That was the whole thing with this whole
that's
website thing,
that's
too.
Why you're
it's
still
like,
here.
We're not reinventing the wheel here. Let's just use someone else's.
Yeah. Jason, that's why you're still here.
I know.
Right.
for that kind of insight.
Okay.
This
so.
Next threat is to not pay his fees. Not renew. Yeah.
So I'm hearing no, don't
let,
charge the convenience
yeah.
fee yet.
Let it ride.
Tentatively, yeah.
Let's see
okay.
how it
let it ride.
Okay. Thank you. So that's the good news. All of Hunter missed it.
Okay, are we through with item 9? Yes. Then we'll move on to item 10, the director's report.
I had a lot to say this month. Could you tell? J-Man, could you tell?
Surprising.
Surprising. Okay, so we've spent a great deal of time talking with Asset and talking with state procurement about how and why we need to continue cleaning up our data and why we need the extra $150,000 to make enhancements to our system. The state procurement officer was very upset to read in our buddies that we were calling this e-licensing because the state has a contract or an agreement with Deloitte to use Salesforce if state agencies want to go through e-licensing, which in techno speak means from the moment somebody drops an application at our window and is created as an applicant and then receives registration through the back end through renewals, they want us to use Deloitte and Salesforce, the platform, for this process. And as you know, 13 smaller boards were the test group for this project, and our research has indicated that it has not been a pleasant experience for them, in much the same way that we experienced the GL Solutions issues. There was very minimal customization, a lot of enhancements that they claim, which the agencies claim, are necessary to do their business. Deloitte wasn't very accommodating to making changes. So for instance, private post-secondary licenses schools and not people, but the Deloitte platform on Salesforce wouldn't accommodate that. So now all their business processes had to be changed to accommodate the vendor's platform, whereas our goal was to have our business made known to the vendor and have our business processes accommodated, not vice versa. So there have been a lot of issues, and I told you last month that we actually asked Deloitte and Salesforce for an estimated bid when we submitted our budget because we wanted to know, okay, this is what IT partners said it would cost to make the online license renewals work. What would Salesforce cost? And they sent us a bid that was $553,000. And understanding after speaking to me that we only wanted a bite-sized portion for this project to see how it would work, they said they wouldn't accommodate and we'd have to go end-to-end, meaning front door to renewals through them for just two groups. And so, you know, Asset at the time said, that's ridiculous, you can't afford that. I said, that's ridiculous, we can't afford that. And anyway, the short story was that when we titled our request for the 150, we learned we needed to retitle it. So now it's being called an enhancement to our current system. As a result, we will need to go through the project investment justification process and interview potential other vendors before we can actually award the project to IT partners, who is most familiar with our data since they are cleaning it for us. So I tried to summarize that in the front page. Do you have any questions about it? It's just never ending.
So what did you just say?
Yeah. So we're working with SPO, we're working with Asset to make sure everybody understands why we need the 150K and what we want to do with it, and we're not saying the word e-licensing because we don't have the funds to go with Deloitte, Salesforce, and their platform at this point.
But you can get what you want done for 150, but not through Deloitte.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Right. It's just not the politically correct thing to say. So thank you.
I'm surprised you weren't sensitive to that.
I know.
Stephen, working through the government is a complete cluster.
And
that's synopsis right there. That's just the whole thing right there.
Yes. And our other pending IT issue, we are getting sympathetic nods from Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting, and hopefully we will hear back from SPO about whether they wish to pursue it on our behalf. We talked already about the home inspector research that mm-hmm. Mr. Parlin did. Mm-hmm. I put down that the governor of New Mexico's executive order is out, and it's real similar to what we faced 2 years back, where we had to write that treatise basically justifying why none of the professions that sit at this table really need to be deregulated. So I thought that was interesting that now New Mexico is worried, and their architects board exec said that he's convinced that it doesn't apply to the architects board. So who knows? I do have the executive order in case you want to read it. And CLEAR, which is the organization we sent Rob to last month, is having a training for regulators in South Carolina called Under the Magnifying Glass, Managing Public Perception in an...
What's that called? In an era.
An era of deregulation, I think. Anyway. So I would like to go to that, and I think Patty would like to go to that. Do any of you want to go to it?
Where is it?
Under Charles the Magnifying Glass, Managing Public Perception in and of Regulation. So it is January 9th.
That'll be cold. No hurricanes then.
No thanks.
It'll be chilly, but we might learn a lot.
And rainy and cold. Yeah.
Okay. We would have to book it by December 18th, so let me know if you want to go. And, so before Jerry left NCWS, he sent everyone an FTC report, which was also sent to us by some of the architect boards. Apparently the FTC has now recognized the certificate programs that they offer as okay for reciprocity. So I think the national councils are very happy about that. Anyway,
What does that mean? I mean, can you use a certificate in lieu of a license? I don't know.
I think they feel that the certificate, even though they didn't understand that you had to pay a lot for it, was helpful in getting professionals registration in other states. So better than the compact idea that was...
Oh, you mean the record, having an NCWS record
or an NCARS certificate. Yeah, so they worked, the association, the national councils worked really hard to get that organized through the FTC. And then I emailed back and said, but do they know how expensive the NCARS food cover is? They don't. Mm-mm. And how that in itself, in my opinion, is a bar, which I did raise at the FARB conference that I went to, and the whole audience was like, wait a minute. And yeah, so I can't help it, guys. I'm sorry. I just have to ask those kinds of questions, make those statements. We have been considering upgrading the front desk positions and doing some reorganization of job descriptions. I think it's time. It's been about 5 years. The agency's busy. I'd like to make sure that a upgraded position gets people to work for us for like a living wage and, you know, recognizes staff. So we're pursuing that. We're taking management training. We're doing as much as we can here to be a fair, non-discriminatory, non-harassment-oriented agency and help our employees enjoy their work here. And no new word on appointments.
Yay.
Yay.
What about this dress code?
Oh, yes, the dress code. It's when
for,
work
for us?
In close
Wait,
quarters.
Right, like it's for us.
You guys are fine. I think you understand the dress appropriate, but sometimes staff needs to be reminded, and then other staff that complain that there's, you know, inappropriate clothing being worn by others at the office. So
Yes, we have to.
Neo starts with the socks.
Those things.
You have to change your socks.
Yes. Aren't you glad I didn't trouble you with that? Okay.
Hang a hammock Fridays. Can we check not going to happen.
They are bright.
Speedo Thursday.
What'd you say?
Speedo Thursday.
Yeah. You can wear anything you want, my.
If you would like to code, I will provide it to you. But
trust
the most
you.
Interesting part of it is what you can't wear and the list that follows. Yeah. Anyway, I read that by DOA. They claim you can wear fishnet stockings, so I just throw that out there.
But Andrew can't wear his wife beater T-shirt.
Correct. No wife beater tees. So without a shirt over it.
Oh, really?
Right.
That makes it classy.
It's so classy.
Right. Yes. NCARB apparently is unveiling a new computer system that will track continuing education for those who are licensed in different states. There will, I'm sure, be a charge. I don't know what that will be, but
it'll be a lot.
They're trying to make themselves more relevant. And really, the only other thing I have, because I want to let Jack and Patty talk about CLARB, is we were invited to the NCWS Board Chair MBA meeting in Atlanta in February. So, do you want to go?
Where? Board Chair?
Atlanta. Yeah.
The prison?
Alejandro?
Or correctional facility?
It's close. It's that airport hotel.
Yeah, that's the correctional
facility. It's right there.
Facility.
I bring it up because we need to let them know shortly that they...
It's in Atlanta when?
What is it,
it's
Jason?
It's in February.
Is that in?
No.
That's cold. I have a couple of blocked out dates already in February.
Is it going to be nice where I'm going?
I'm pretty much shot that whole month.
You are? Okay,
so.
I'll send
me the dates and I'll see if I can work them
out. I'll send everyone the dates.
I'd like to make a motion that Alejandro go.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Okay, I'll send you the date and you can see.
Isn't this funner than your office?
Yours is all quiet.
Well, yes, but that is a pretty low bar.
Very funny.
Excellent comeback.
Okay. And then I get to speak at ASBOG, but Jay Fu and Steve will be there, so that's it.
Behind her.
Yeah, so I'll behave. It'll be interesting to hear what's happened in Texas, whether their vote has gone through to deregulate the geoscientists. And then I hope the numbers look good to you. Kurt is becoming a whiz with the new system. I think they're pretty accurate. And with that, I will be quiet unless you have questions.
Keep me posted on South Carolina or send me the dates for that too. I'll see if I can work that in.
What did you say was in Atlanta?
The NCWS Board Chair Board Exec meeting to hear about them.
Diego and I went 1 year.
In Atlanta.
Yeah, and Bob Stanley and I went 1 year, and they made him sleep in the broom closet because they didn't get him a hotel room.
You're not selling it.
And then Patty and Ed went 1 year, and there was Jerry Carter had to bail an engineer from one of the southern states out of jail for...
He got in a fight with a woman in the lobby.
Yeah, and was arrested.
They're always exciting.
Yeah, you never
know. Wow.
Okay.
Huh. Didn't know engineers could be so rambunctious.
Yeah. You didn't?
Okay, well, I think that's enough for the director's report.
Thank you.
Board chair report. I guess Alejandro's still monkeying around with Ina Road exit. but I don't have anything to report, so we can move on to standing committee reports and L&R. We had our meeting last week and we discussed the home inspectors and the survey substantive policy statement that we just voted on.
So we saw the outcome of both of those items today. Home Inspector Rules Standards Committee?
We haven't had a committee meeting since last board meeting.
Okay. Item 13, Board Member Reports and Outside Activities, ASBOG. Melissa, do you have anything on that? Stephen, do you have anything on that?
Just that we're going at the end of the
she'll
week.
She'll be speaking.
Good.
We're going there next week.
Right.
Well, that's the one I should point to.
You're going there next week.
I am. Okay, Clarb?
Oh, no, Jack. I went in, Clarb, I didn't do this.
You know, the theme for the conference was disruption.
Disruption.
So, should have been you there.
That's me.
And it really was, how do we deal with deregulation? And it's really a repeat of what we did last year.
Okay.
It was just, all the breakouts were the same discussion, everyone was sharing their horror stories, but really no effort to move forward in a cohesive, let's all work towards this particular goal. No discussion on model boards. That's kind of surprised me, because I think, Melissa, what you've done previously, people still remember what that was all about. And
good.
I didn't hear one word about a model board or how to deal with it. what did surprise me was, impressed me, some states are a lot more proactive in dealing with their legislators. How do we get out and meet with the legislators, not only with our districts, but at board members? They're all encouraging that we spend a lot more time with different committees or individuals just to make our play. A couple of fascinating presentations. One was on future technology. A Smith Group was there. Their IT guy who leads all their national offices, landscape architect, by the way, he went through a list of all their software that they give to every new employee. Instead of just having like AutoCAD or SketchUp or whatever, two or three or four, that I think were four, they've got like 35. And then he did a presentation on where they see the technology going. And they're doing virtual reality now out at a job site. And they can point at a spot in virtual reality and it ties right into the documentation. And then he talked about how they are now transferring documentation from an approved set of plans out into the field directly to the contractors. And there's a lot of discussion about how is this going to affect the process of a final approval and registration, because there's a big jump past the approval process where these like RFIs or whatever is being issued. It goes right into the field and it's no longer a set of plans. They get in effect like an iPad. It's a digital platform.
Yep.
So a lot of stuff is getting reduced in terms of the process. They're going straight to the field. So there's a lot of discussion about how you manage that. No real final decision. A lot of states are concerned about digital registration. Plans going through. Some states don't like the fact that we can do electronic stamps with electronic signature. So a lot of states are trying to figure out a way to fine-tune that and put more control on that process, because they can see too many opportunities to, as we've experienced here, other people take advantage of that. So that was a real concern. Toronto is a fascinating town. I was blown away with the number of glass condo towers. And I'm talking about 10 or 15 stories. These are 30 to 50 story buildings all over the waterfront. Amazing.
Freezing in winter.
I can see it be cold in the winter, but I was sure impressed. That's it. I'll let Patty add to that.
You know, my disappointment is they did spend a lot of money on some digital presentations about the digital future, but what they didn't do is talk about how it pertains to us as regulators. We have a big problem with digital signatures, and you know, somebody has came to L&R and said, I need more guidance on how I protect a digital signature, and we're all like, So my disappointment with CLARB, and I did include it in my survey, is, you know, let's not just talk about it. What do we do about it? Talking about it, spending a lot of money on nice presenters doesn't get us any place. We need to do something.
That's a good point, Patty. I had a similar experience at a private conference, a private users group for photogrammetrists and LIDAR folks, and they were asking, what is regulation? What does it look like? How can we, how do we fit in? How do we make this all work with regulation? And there were two board members there, me and Steve Hyde from Florida. And it was interesting, the conversations we heard, and the positive responses by the companies to conform to the requirements. They want direction, regulatory direction in what they do. So I don't think it's, I think we're gonna, as we move forward with this stuff, it is the opportunity to look at it from a regulatory standpoint. I think it's going to be more welcome than not.
So you as like a topic for future agenda item?
Yeah.
Or L&R or something?
I think, yeah, it's something that requires study. I think it should go to, like, you know, how they like to say, go to committee. You know, I mean, I think we realize the issues, and I know all companies struggle with that. How do we control electronic stamps with electronic signatures, especially as drawings get handled by a multitude of people? I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Does anybody control it? Do we know, or just
regulatorily, it's your responsibility to control your stamp and your seal. How you do that is the challenge. What I would say, and what I know Doug Folk would say, who lectures on this, is that keep an original of every plan that your seal is put on, so that if someone steals your seal and puts it on a document, and then we get a complaint that Neil Jones did this horrible building, God forbid, Neil can say, oh no, I didn't. I never did. I did this, and sent it to that person. And that's definitely evidence that you guys see when we review cases like that.
But that protects you. It doesn't protect
right.
the public.
Correct.
The cases you've seen where somebody took somebody's seal and then authorized, you know, 70 homes as being safe for occupancy when,
right?
That's
I've also seen cases where documents were revised with the electronic seal imprinted on it and then not
resealed.
Removed and resealed.
Right.
So basically, a change to a document that the original PE had never even seen is now processed because his seal is embedded in
right.
the document electronically. So we need to look at all contingencies and parameters when we want to control electronic sealed documents. As I say, I don't know the answer, but I know the problem.
I mean, maybe we should have a bigger meeting and invite, you know, folks to come and do like a symposium or something to propose legislation or something.
I don't know.
There's ways around everything. So you make a rule, someone's going to, they want to cheat, they're going to find a way to cheat.
How is it any different than exactly knifing off of the seal in 2000 and
photocopying it on?
Yeah. I mean,
it's not. Or like the special inspection forms, we saw their stamp and they just whited out the address and typed in a new address. You know, changed the
maybe
form, just what you're saying.
Kind of crimson.
So we're still on CLARB.
You need wax seals like you have in your brain, like the old time stuff.
Okay,
seal
well, let me know if you want to put it on a future meeting agenda.
We'll bring that up in item 14.
Yeah.
I was kind of the wedding crasher there, sorry, Patty.
She brought it up.
NCARB. I know. I crashed it. Anything from NCARB? Anybody?
Nope. Nothing new.
Nothing new. NCES.
Oh, I did see that they sent us a $4,000 bill for WestCARB.
They did. I'd wait until the last possible minute to pay it. So
you know, you know, you can complain to that. Isn't Ed like the new president of WestCARB?
Yes.
Complain to him. Start writing letters to him.
I will. You're it.
What's this for?
I want a refund of a lot of money. Anyway,
okay.
CARB is a second organization, and CARB makes us join and pay ridiculous dues to for nothing. So, anyway, just catching her up on the background.
Fine. Speaking of ridiculous money, NCEES.
Only the news of the new dude who is the new Cherry.
Any intel on his wages?
None yet.
A lot.
Yeah. But I did talk to Patty Mamola at the FARB meeting regarding that. She didn't get an interview because the scuttlebutt was that she was overqualified.
Well, let's go with the worst
question. So they took one thing.
That's what you want with your organization right there.
Another old Southern white dude to earn $500K, but a woman.
That was a dude?
Yeah, the new CEO is a.
Oh. Jeez,
man.
Joke.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Isn't Mike Armstrong like 450?
Yes.
He's a good old boy.
I know.
What do you do for that?
I know. So
he's from like Kentucky or something, right?
Yes.
Yep. Kentucky.
And they had like, I don't know how many engineers live there. I mean, like. Three, four. So, but he was an accountant, and NCWS is all about their savings account. So,
yeah, I didn't see he had a PE.
He does not.
That makes perfect sense. That's why Patty is overqualified.
You know, that came up in discussion in CLARB. There was a lot of pushback because the old board, some of them, were trying to get new members the ability to appoint, and they didn't necessarily have to be registered.
Right.
A lot of people push back on that.
Yeah. I told them they would, but I, you know, was like, oh.
We got them.
Yeah. I know you did. So, yeah, I don't know how much the new CEO is making. He might not be up at the big nickel, but.
Okay. Future board meetings, topics.
I thought we had a special one. Is this the special one?
Is that November 1, the special one?
November 19th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was the
5th. That's the hearing for the home inspector.
How is that going? We were just asking. How is that going to happen? Is it going to be telephonic? Is it going to be in person?
November 19th, it's on the agenda.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully.
It will be in person.
Unless he decides to voluntarily surrender his license, which Scott, I believe, maybe.
There is presently a settlement conference scheduled.
Good luck.
So this could not happen then?
Correct.
It may not, yes.
This meeting might not happen.
No, it is scheduled.
This is the
we do have a settlement conference, but it's always best to assume.
Okay.
And, if let's say you have your settlement conference and you come to an agreement, obviously the board has to approve that. Are we going to do, like, send it out and just do a telephonic just for up or down vote on it and that's it? Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So you'll let us know as the time gets closer.
We will.
So November 19th. What time? Are we doing it at 9 o'clock? 9:30? Because we start hearings at 9:30 or?
We can start it at 9:30.
This is on a Monday, though.
We have it 9 a.m. on Monday right now.
9 a.m.
9 a.m.
Thanksgiving's
a
Thursday.
We'll start it for the time noticed on the complaint notice of hearing, since this will be the only item on the agenda.
Really? We'd have lunch?
He was fine.
Okay, any suggestions for future topics?
I have two.
Board meetings?
Signing your
Do
license.
Do you want to sponsor a holiday luncheon this year?
Where are you getting food from?
Any suggestions?
I don't know. We had Greek last year. That was pretty good.
We did.
That's a topic for our future meeting.
Yeah.
We can do it on the 19th. Yeah.
Okay.
We're good for that.
All right. So I'll look into
get
that.
That job.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah.
Yeah, big job.
I think we should do the Christmas thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll chat with you about
future meeting.
We're on the future meeting. And then, do you want to vote for new officers given the current composition of the board? I know we usually wait until people have been officially appointed and reappointed. I don't know that we're going to get any new engineer members, and I haven't seen that Neil or Steve have been reappointed. But that shouldn't keep us from...
How can you vote? I mean, four be gone the next month.
Jason,
that's true, and then we'd have to redo it.
I don't get this.
Future meeting,
you
guys. Do you want to discuss it at a future meeting? Don't discuss it now.
Yeah, that should be a topic for discussion at a future meeting.
Okay.
Put it on the November meeting.
The November meeting?
Yeah.
It's just a hearing. Are we trying to keep it like that big?
Well, we can't discuss having a future agenda, a holiday party at the December meeting. Are we going to do it or not? No.
Darn. We could do a vote in January after the election to see, what happens, and then have our own election for officers.
Oh, that's right. We could all be gone.
Well,
it's true. Me too.
All of us. Mm. If the governor changes.
The item will be on the next available meeting.
All right.
Garcia threatened to do that.
Or Politano did.
Okay.
Does
anybody else have any suggested topics for future meetings?
Did you want to talk about the
electronic
digital age and how we start to do it?
Yeah, let's
signatures.
Add that to the next one. Electronic signatures and data collection.
That's because they're running out of time. They get out real fast.
Is there anything else? Hearing nothing, I need a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to adjourn.
Well, he already did, but he seconded it. We've got a motion and a second. Meeting adjourned at 12:16. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.